All right, let's go.
Everyone, welcome to Don Cherry's Grapevine Podcast. And Dad, can I ask you a question? What do you think the Leafs, or how would you judge the Leafs in what they're going to have to do this year, coming season, to be a success in your estimation?
Well, I think they have to get by the first round. And don't forget, the Leafs hit the post twice in overtime. I know they were up 3-1 and they lost, but they hit the post in overtime twice. And, which would have put the Montreal. So if Price hadn't turned into a brick wall, they would have been all right. But no, I'd say they get by the first round and then they go from there.
So if they just get by the first round and then lose in the second round.
Well, it depends on how they lose the second round, but they get by the first round. I mean, you know how long it's been since they get by the first round.
Yeah,
you know. I mean, it's been, and they're up 3-1. I don't care what anybody says. Up 3-1 and hit the post twice in overtime. Everybody's on them. And
to be very demoralizing for them. Would that carry over into the next season? Would that carries
yes.
over?
Yes. Oh.
They have a good memory of that?
I'll tell you one thing. I have never seen a guy. I mean, I know Marner's making 11-6. That's a lot of money, 11-6. Imagine making $11 million.
No.
Imagine making $11 million. Anyhow, 11-6. I didn't even throw in $600,000.
Yeah, $600,000.
And so young.
I think he's the highest paid guy in the National
League. Austin Matthews might be a little bit more than him.
No,
I don't know. We'll have to double check that.
Anyhow,
not that anybody cares what I think, but... I think if they don't get to the semifinals, it's a disaster. I mean, you can't set the bar that low that you win the first round.
No, I think just get by the first round, and then we'll go from there. That's the way I think about it. And but talk back into Marner. No matter what he does, I have never seen people turn on a guy like they have Marner. And Marner had a good year, I guess in the playoffs. They counted in the playoffs.
But don't you think that resentfulness comes from the type people, the average Joe Blow, realizes the type of money that he makes, and you get resentful when someone doesn't produce.
And there's one thing I would never have him do. I would never have him kill penalties, because I had to have a specialist kill penalties, block shots, do anything. Now, when Hyman was nothing, he used to block shots. Remember, he used to block shots all the time, and I used to mention this all the time. Marner, I don't know if he's going to block shots anymore. I mean, he 11-6, he gets paid to put the puck in the net. I would never have him kill penalties. I would have specialists kill penalties.
So let's go one more team, because when you talk Toronto with all the stars, the other star team is Edmonton. What do you consider a successful season with Edmonton?
I'd say the finals. I mean, when you have the greatest player in the world, and then McDavid, and you have Dreisaitl, you should make the finals. I mean, with those two guys, you really should make the finals.
So if Edmonton doesn't gets by the second round, but doesn't make the finals,
no, with McDavid, you have to make the you have to re- you really have to do. I mean, he is the best player in the world.
Dad, just want to talk about Peter McNabb, a good friend of the Cherry family,
yes.
And played for you in Boston, and
yes.
He just got elected into the American Hockey Hall of Fame.
Well, he should be. Now, I wrote down his goals. Can I just read you? His goals is 38, 41, 35, 43 goals. Imagine that, the year he played for me. Well, you couldn't afford him now. Well, let's say a guy get 5 million, guy got 5 goals. And he's getting $6 million. Getting $6 million. $6 million. No, $6.6 million or something like that. But can you imagine how much Peter McNabb would get? Now, you know, I remember about Peter. Oh, I can mention a lot of things I could say about Peter. We had a lot of fun. Diane, remember his wife, his first wife was Diane. You knew her pretty good, eh, Sydney?
Oh, she was a real athlete, too. She was a tennis pro, I believe, but she gave lessons, and I took tennis lessons from her. She used to come over to the house all the time. We had a beautiful home in Boston and tennis courts back there, and boy, we sure had a lot of fun on those tennis courts, and just hard to believe, you know, people wouldn't believe it, how many players used to come over and
yeah, everybody used to love those, and it was a beautiful tennis. It was nestled, as they say,
nestled
in amongst big oak trees, big pine trees around there.
Remember? Yeah, we backed onto a conservation area. It was beautiful. We had a nice pool, and players used to come over, and to think that the players would come over to the coach's house is pretty unique, I would think.
Yeah, and swim and play tennis and just hang around. Sometimes
I never went on a tennis court.
Well, we did one time. I don't know if people are interested in this.
Go ahead, tell that story.
Well, you know,
you told it earlier.
My cousin and I, Stephen, and his dad, your brother, Uncle Rich, and all this, and you guys weren't big on playing tennis. And Stephen,
I never played tennis.
You never did, and Stephen and I used to play all the time. And so they said, "Yeah, well, let's play a friendly game." Well, you and Uncle Rich just beat Stephen and I something awful. I'll never forget. You had construction boots on, and
I wore those construction boots all the time.
You did around the house, and to see the athletic ability of you and Uncle Rich, two ex, you know, hockey players, just put that ball where it was supposed to be, and Stephen and I are running around like a bunch of idiots trying to smash the ball, and you guys would just lob the ball where we
Peter
couldn't
was,
get
Peter
it.
Was a good Peter McNabb was a good
well, Peter was good because he always played against Diane and all, and so, and then you'd have the players with playing with their wives, which was never good.
Yes, Mom. There was an infamous game between Terry O'Reilly and his wife, Lourdes.
Lourdes, yeah.
And Peter and Diane. And Mom had to have house rules after that.
Yes, house rules we
because
after that.
Peter and Diane, and again, Diane was, a ski teacher at a university.
Yeah.
And she was very athletic. And Terry O'Reilly's wife, Lourdes, wasn't. She was like... Yeah, she was really good.
Was she good looking?
She was very good looking. Oh, and you know, she could hit the ball, but not like, you know, not like Peter and Terry.
Yeah,
and then, like, they were all power hitters.
And Terry liked to win if he was playing anything.
Checkers.
And I tell you a story. I just thought of it just now. They made fun of Terry. I didn't even know there was a weight room downstairs in the Boston Gardens. There's a weight room downstairs. And they made fun of Terry. And Terry was going out. He had a suit on and everything. And they made fun. Oh, you couldn't lift. And the players told me this story that he went down after a game, and he took off his jacket and the whole thing, and he lifted weights you couldn't believe, and you could not beat Terry at anything.
Yeah, he gets things. So Peter and Diana were playing, and of course they were beating Terry and Lourdes, and of course Peter was the instigator. He was chirping at Terry, and Terry doesn't like that, and he was getting madder and madder, and then he exploded, and Lourdes walked off the court.
Well, he was blaming Lourdes, which for losing, that she wasn't trying hard enough.
I remember your mother saying, go out and do what? I don't even know what's going
well,
on.
Well, because she made her cry, and then that was the end of it, and Mom said... Mom somehow was your fault and said, listen.
How come it was my fault?
Yeah,
I don't
you
even.
You go out and you talk to Terry that he, you know, and this and that, and he can't be so competitive and da-da-da. And so that was it after that.
Then Mom made the rule. She said husbands and wives can't play together because you guys just can't have a friendly game.
Wow.
You're so competitive, you have to win. So wives and husbands can't play anymore,
right?
Because all of a sudden all we hear is screaming and yelling and throwing of rackets and stuff like that.
Remember who I played doubles with?
Oh, yeah, Harry Sinnott.
Harry Sinnott. Yeah. Diane used to tell me, if you're playing doubles, Cindy, never look back at the persons it's serving. So I really, really, because I had a tendency to look. And boy, Harry, first serve, he whacked that ball, and he hit me in square in the back. Wow.
I remember that.
Did it hurt? And I'm trying to shrug it off like a hockey player and not go down. It was so embarrassing.
I don't even, what happened in that game? But
I don't even know. I don't remember.
I know Harry could play pretty good.
You know, I know Harry really felt bad, and you laughed and and stuff. So I don't remember anything after that.
Well, I know Terry got in the Hockey Hall of Fame, the American Hockey Hall of Fame.
Yeah, Peter did. Yep, got in the Hockey Hall of Fame. And
congratulations. I remember him when I was doing Coach's Corner. I was just kidding him. But Forsberg. I liked Forsberg. But I knew he was in love with Forsberg. Everybody in Colorado was. And I said, he's a big phony. He started to almost cry. I mean, he was really, he must have been good.
Well, you know you're close to players, Dad, and just like a Seinfeld episode, when they ask you to help them move. Tell them the story about you helping those guys move. And this was after you were fired, right?
Yeah, this was the summer after I was fired. So I went over, and I said there was Mike Milbury, I think, Peter McNabb, and Terry. How's that sound?
I think it was that, yeah. I think Ricky Middleton was there, too, for some reason.
No, he was probably just looking.
Yeah, I don't think he was up.
Can't see.
Yeah, and I told him, I said, now you should empty the fridge first.
Yeah, well, what was happening was, I think it was at Terry O'Reilly's house, and he was moving to One Cherry Lane.
Yeah, how do you like that? One Cherry Lane.
And he had above a garage, I believe, and he had kind of like a little office where he used to do his stained glass. Remember Terry used to do glass window? And he had a fridge there, and they were moving it down, and it had like four little steps, and then there was a landing, and then there was like six or seven steps. They were moving it, and then you gave him some advice.
I said, you should empty it first.
The fridge. They were
the
moving.
The fridge first.
Well, you would think that would make sense, but...
Well, anyhow, and they said, you can't tell us what to do. You're not our coach anymore. Yeah. And the door... And they started to take the fridge down and got in... And the fridge door opened, and everything came flying out. Oh, was I happy.
Yeah, it was just like, I was there, we were watching, and it was like, at the ketchup bottle hit, it smashed, and there was ketchup, and then the mayonnaise, and then the mustard, and then the milk. And just like, it was, and the guys started to laugh, and they couldn't do anything.
Was I ever happy. Yeah. Anyhow, that was... Peter McNabb and...
Well, there's a couple of stories just before we get on to Peter. I remember one time with Peter was I used to go on the ice before practice. So I was on the ice and you used to get a stick. I used to usually get a Ricky Middleton stick. Oh, yeah. And you used to shave it down because Dad says, well, you know, your philosophy was, Ricky Middleton could hold it, I shouldn't be able to hold it. That's 10 years old. Like, so
that's
Dad
right.
would shave it all down so I could get a better grip. So I was on the ice and used to take, but before that, like, used to take hours to shave that stick down. It was like a piece of art. So I was on the ice and I was skating around, and Peter McNabb came out and he says, Tim, let's see you take a slap shot. So I remember I was again 10 or 11 and I says, I don't know how to take a slap shot. He says, you don't know how to take a slap shot. How are you going to make the National Hockey League if you don't know how to take a slap shot? So he was showing me how to take a slap shot, and you come on the ice, and then you guys were the only two guys on the ice. I don't know why you were, because usually, so you skated over, and you said, what are you doing? And Peter says, well, Tim doesn't know how to take a slap shot. And you go, I don't want him to take a slap shot. And Peter goes, well, how's he going to make the National Hockey League if he doesn't take a slap shot? And there's a few adjectives thrown in here. You said, any dummy can slap the puck. I want him to learn how to handle the puck, and I don't want him slapping it. And Peter goes, well, he's got to learn it. And he goes, no. So you guys got into the argument. So I'm sitting there. So Peter kind of goes, come on, Tim, let's see you take a slap shot. So I took a slap shot, and my stick snapped right in two.
That's why I had it.
And then he goes, see, Peter, see? And then Peter went, uh-oh. Like, now Peter thinks he's in trouble and all that. But
that stick thing, that happened the same thing with Smotsy. Remember you were making a stick for Tim?
Oh, I remember
again,
that one, boy.
You were shaving it down, and Smotsy took a lean on it.
Oh, and leaned on it and broke it. And he was really... He knew I was mad. And he says, no, I didn't. He says, you did that on purpose. He says, no, I didn't. And
then he jumped on and he started, he goes, let me make one.
No, I said, you can't make one. I remember, funny you remember that.
Yeah.
Boy, I'll tell you.
Well, you were always whittling sticks down for Tim.
Well, I could tell you someday, I'll tell you when I was whittling one time and when Bobby Orr was at the far end of the thing. Well, I might as well tell it now.
Yeah.
I was sitting at the end.
In the dressing room, there was like a little, there was like a little room off the main dressing room.
And I'd come out, and I was just shaving. And Bobby was at the far end. He never came in while the players were there. And he'd ride the bike. And I remember Paul Mooney coming in, smoking a pipe. I never forgot this. And he's smoking a pipe.
And Paul Mooney was the president of the Brewers.
He was the president of the, and he went to talk to Bobby. And I you know, I'm kind of listening. And he said to Bobby, he says, Bobby, let me talk to you for, and he says, no, get out of here. You're trying to drive a wedge between Al and I, Al Eagleson and I. And he wouldn't listen to him. And so Mooney didn't like me either. Well, nobody liked me. And he walked out and he just shook his head. He was going to offer him 18% of the club if he had to listen. But he trusted Eagleson so much that he said, no, get out of here. Don't talk to me. He says, you're trying to drive a wedge between Al and I. And he was going to offer him 18% of the club. You know how much that is?
Yeah, right now. So just think if you stepped in and said, hey, Bobby.
No, if I, you know, yeah. I didn't know.
No.
I didn't know at the time. I remember phoning Bobby, and Bobby said, they're just offering me this much. And I don't know how we get into this, but anyhow, I was fixing the sticks, and I remember Mooney just walking out, just shaking, just shook his head.
Well, I remember another funny thing with Peter and Diana.
That's not funny.
No, that's not funny. But with Peter and Diana was we was in the playoffs, and you guys were in Philly, and Ricky Middleton scored
overtime,
and then Terry scored double overtime.
Yeah,
and so we were all excited because you know, and so all the wives. This is back in the day where you could meet people at the gate coming off, and I can't do that now. And you come walking off. And,
and she was standing. She had a purse, and she says, "Nice game, Grapes." And I said, "Yeah, we out-coached them again." And she hit me. She really drove me with the purse. I never forgot that.
Yeah. Well, I remember the thing, too. I remember when they were over the house one time, a quick story, funny story, was that we had a big pool, and Peter used to come in and swim laps, and the pool was really warm. We didn't have a heater, but it was just the sun hit all day, right, Cindy? It was really warm.
Yeah, it was nice.
So he kept, for somehow, he was making fun of us that we didn't like cold pools, and he was whatever. So he got out of the pool. And we had a hose. And he goes, I got to cool myself off. So he turned the hose and he bent down and put the water over his head. Well, unbeknownst to him, Blue, our bull terrier, just went nuts when she saw a hose. And she took off and chairs went flying. And we're screaming at Peter to drop the hose. And he looks up and just sees this white blur. So he dropped it. And before the hose hit the ground, Blue had grabbed it and was just tearing it to shreds. Peter almost had a heart attack. He said, what did I do? He was going, oh, my... But I remember, and on that one, was that his wife, Diane, she was a coach for a university ski team, I think in New Hampshire or something. And you said, somehow you were talking about something, and she said, well, you know, I put a list on who makes the team.
Yeah.
And you said, well, you don't tell the people that didn't make the team that they got cut. You just put it on the wall. Yeah. And she said, yeah. Well, you got into it with her. You were saying... You know, you should be, you're the coach. You should go up and tell these young kids that they didn't make the team. They'd like to hear that, not just read it on the wall. You said, that's chicken. And no. And then, so it went from lighthearted joking to you guys really got into a big argument over it.
Well, it's true.
It is true.
Well, I remember, I won't give a guy that got two goals for us. Remember that?
Was it Clark or Gibson? Or Dougie Hine, one of those guys, one of the guys in Rochester. He was leading the American League in goals, and he got called up.
MVP. And so what happened was, I'll tell you what happened. Mm. Harry said, don't ever let anybody go home because they never know if they get back. So I let Andy Savard go home to give back. Well, they had a snowstorm. He couldn't get out. We brought a guy up, MVP guy.
So Andy didn't make it. Back, and then you called up this guy from Rochester, and he was leading the American League in goals.
And he was good. And everybody, why I didn't have him up is because I did not like guys that weren't playing, not hanging around. Anyhow, he got two goals, and I had to tell him he was going back down again. And I remember skating around. I could hardly sleep the night before, and I remember going up when we were skating around. I said, you're going back to Rochester. needless to say, he got, after getting two goals, he was very unhappy.
Well, didn't you say that when he scored the two goals, Harry Sinden came down and was mad?
Yeah. We won. He said, there, now you see what you've done? I got two goals.
That's unusual because you did like playing with a short bench because you didn't like.
Well, you know. I remember we guy. Yeah, I don't know why. Well, he was right in Rochester, see, and he could just drive
up. I think he was in Buffalo. The game was in Buffalo, I think.
The game was in Buffalo, and he was in Rochester, so I had to bring him up. I would have played short. Boy, was Harry ever mad that Andy Savard never got back.
Yeah.
And then the guy got two goals. And Harry come up to me after the game and said, see what you've done?
Well, another funny thing with Peter, he had a funny nickname.
Oh.
What was it?
Iota.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you a story about that one.
So how did Peter McNabb get the name Iota?
Well,
Iota.
We only call it for him a couple of weeks just to bug him. Harry flew out to, I remember it was in Colorado. And I found out the night before with the radio announcer, we were having a beer. I remember having a beer with him. And he said, Harry's coming out. I said, oh, geez, Harry's coming out.
No, you were in the midst of a big losing streak.
Yeah,
right?
Oh, boy, we couldn't win for nothing. We were so far in first place, we couldn't be caught, but we couldn't, and we were really losing. I mean, we couldn't do anything. And Harry and Tom Johnson were flying out, and they were going to give a lecture. So,
did you think that maybe you were going to get fired?
I thought I was going to get fired. I probably
like you know when you hear the coach, the GM.
I was a madman back in those days.
And those guys, and you would never let anyone usually speak. Like this was quite unusual to let someone lecture your team before.
I couldn't understand. I didn't understand it. So anyhow, we had a room. Well, it wasn't that big. It was a bedroom, and Harry had got a room. And I remember I was over by the window and I had a toothpick. And Harry was just ripping the guys and, you know, going up and down and saying that we have to do this, we have to do that and everything. You know, everybody knows. No kidding. And so at the end, what a coach is supposed to do is when you see a guy's wearing down, you say, okay, guys, let's get ready for the game tonight or some bullshit like that. And I never said anything. And you could see Harry had a light blue shirt on, and he was sweating underneath the arms.
Oh, boy.
And you could see the sweat going on. So anyhow, he's finished. He's yelling and hollering and giving everybody heck and everything. And so now he's going to end it with a real zinger. And Peter's sitting there beside the bed, and he said, you, McNabb, your checking hasn't improved one iota. And walked out.
Of all the guys to pick on.
And Peter's standing there, and he fell back on the bed like, why me? Why me? Why? And so we called him Iota for about 2 weeks after that. And it was a pretty good talk, and we didn't pull out of it.
But the thing is, Dad, when you had a different style of coaching in the sense that when you were on a losing streak, you didn't lambaste the guys. That's when you praise them. You used to give them heck more when they were winning and they weren't doing what they were told,
well,
but they
I
were
could
still
tell
working.
A story.
Winning.
One of the greatest stories, you're right, Cindy, as Cheevers, we had lost in 18 games, but we were playing lousy.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to tell the story again, but I'm going to tell it again. It's one of my greatest stories, I think, anyhow. And I had a big spin. You guys, I mean, you know, and when the guys are picking their nails.
So you're giving them heck about.
Oh, they won 18 straight. So I never, and no, nobody's paying any attention at all. 18 straight, what are you going to do? So I remember Cheevers was taping his goal stick. And I went up to him. I said, you know, Jerry, I said, nobody listens to you when you've won or you haven't lost in 18. He's what? I said, you know what, Jerry? And he had that shitty grin on his face. And I knew I'd been had.
Yeah.
I used to start all the time. I used to start Peter McNabb. He was about 6'4". He was a big guy. And Terry was about 6'2". And Terry O'Reilly was about 6'2". And John Winsink was about 6'2". And Milbury was pretty tall, too. So I used to start those guys all the time. So guys looking on the bench would look out, and they'd see, holy shit, they're a big club. Holy man, look at the size of those guys. And the rest of the guys were ordinary guys. But I used to start those guys all the time. And that's, you know, it's so different when you look out and you see great big guys. You're sitting on the bench, you have a different mentality. So that's the reason I used to start those guys all the time. And that's a pretty big line. Six foot four, six foot two. And that was a big line. And then when I had Park, and Milbury and Park on the end. So
yeah,
that's
the funny thing is, the biggest guy, he was, you always called Peter, he was the golden lab in your team of pit bulls.
Yeah.
And he took that with, because the funny thing was, he had golden labs, didn't
he? Yeah, he liked
that.
Yeah.
He liked that. And I remember one time, I think we were in Cleveland or something, some godforsaken place we're playing, and somebody said, there's a fight in front of the net, and the puck had gone down, and somebody said, it's Peter, get out, Peter McNabb, yeah, and by God, he could really throw him pretty good.
Yeah, that was good. You know, he fought a guy named Len Frigg.
Oh, yeah, Frigg was a big guy.
Yeah, they were in front of the net, really throwing him.
Frigg, I remember Len Frigg, he was a big guy.
Yeah. So,
well, Terry was, or Peter must have been like a guy that, you know, don't get him mad or look out. You know what I mean?
I don't know why, but anyhow.
Yeah, the guys pretty much teased him after that. Everything was the teams, guys were bug guys. You know what I mean? Like, it was always.
Always, if any weakness you had, it was fair game.
Yeah. I liked the one time he did an interview. We'll wrap up on Peter. He was a good friend of the family. But he did an interview for Boston about 6 months ago, and he asked what the team was like and what it was like playing back during the Bruins days in the 70s, and I loved his answer.
Yeah, and so I'm kind of listening, eh? Or how did I find out about it?
No, we watched it. Like, it was on.
Oh, I was on TV. And, it was big boy hockey.
Yeah, it was big boy hockey for sure.
And I'll tell you one thing, boy, Peter McNabb is one of the best. I mean, 43 goals. Imagine what he'd be making now. He'd be making about $10 million.
So, Dab, I'd like to thank our sponsors, Spreads.ca. They're a Canadian-owned online casino and sportsbook, and now you can bet on single games, which is big. It's all Canadian currency, which is good because you go to some of those ones in, well, they're not in the U.S. They're offshore, and you got to use U.S. dollars. And if you use the promo Grapes, they'll match your deposit up to $200. You get 10 big spins on the big wheel to win some big dough. And your first sports bet, they'll spot you $25. So
beat that.
No. And lots of prop bets, which I always like looking at. Like, if a Leaf game, is Mitch Marner going to score? And you can get points and stuff like that. So the question is, Dad, in sports right now, it's going on. Who's going to be the MVP of the American League? That Shohei Ohtani, the pitcher for the
Angels. Oh, yeah, the guy that pitches and hits.
And hits. So, you know, you look at him, his record is 9-2 as a pitcher, and he's got a an ERA of 3.
He's been pulled, though, Tim, the last couple of times.
Right, he hasn't been. But he's got 44 home runs and 94 RBIs. So do you go with a guy, and nobody's done that since Babe Ruth, or do you go Vladdy Jr. of the Jays? He's got 40. He just leads about every offensive statistics.
So, I never miss a Blue Jay game on TV, and I watch all the games. Vlad would be the guy, would be the MVP. And but we're up here in Canada.
Yeah, it's a biggie.
And that's a biggie, and that means a lot. And then all the sports writers are down there, and this guy, I mean, 9-2. And how many
home runs? As of this is Sunday, as of that, he had 44 home runs.
Well, I still think the Blue Jays are going to make the playoffs, and I watch them all the time, like I said. And Vlad's going to win the MVP, but he's up here in Canada. It means a lot.